Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you for joining us for the 26th episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we have an excellent show. We're going to talk to Richard Hall from the Fantastic Gentleman Ultra site at the end of the podcast. But before we get to this, I'm joined by our excellent producer and co-host, Alex Goldberg. There was a lot of friendlies going on this weekend, so I wanted to see, Alex, if you had a chance to catch any of the games and if anything stood out to you this weekend.
I did, David. I had a little extra time on my hands. I was really sick on Saturday, so God bless my amazing girlfriend. She just took care of me while I got to watch exhibition football, which really just, that's pretty special on her part. But I started the day off with Chelsea Arsenal. I know that was not one of the tournament cups, but I just had to mention that. All I'll say is I love the result. Michy Batshuayi will make things interesting for Alvaro Morata. But David, besides, you know, Patrick Crutone from AC Milan having a great debut, my one takeaway from the weekend was Neymar. Neymar was incredible Saturday night against Juventus. Two unbelievable goals. And it really was just a message, I feel like, from Neymar. It was a message of, hey, whether I play on Barca and Messi and Suarez don't love me, because there was this video going around where it looked like there was some awkwardness and maybe some hostility. But whatever it was, whether it was like, hey, I can be on Barca and I'll boss this on my own, I'll still be the great player with or without you guys, or I can go to PSG, I can go to this team, I can go to that team, I am one of the best players in the world. David, I know it was just a friendly, but especially that second goal where he dribbled through the whole Juve defense, incredible. So that was my weekend. David, how was your weekend?
Yeah, I watched a few games as well, and I agree, Neymar was incredible, really put on a show. You know, made Milan fans very happy to see Bonucci gone from Juve and have Neymar torch Juve's defense. And I also got to watch Milan. My takeaway is Frank Kessié has looked great this summer. I always had, in my mind, the question was Milan getting the Kessié from the first half of last season when he was absolutely crushing it and he was linked to all the top clubs in the PL? Or was Milan getting the Kessié of the second half where he struggled a little bit and you could either chalk that up to him playing in the Africa Cup or Gagliardini leaving, or Serie A kind of getting a scouting book on him, but he would look very impressive against Bayern. Kessié, I think, has been Milan's best player this summer. Then I also got to watch the end of that Real Madrid-Manchester United game, and that penalty shootout, I coined it the Zaza Invitational. That was really something else. I don't think there's any winners in that penalty shootout, but it was definitely very entertaining. But the highlight of the weekend for me is I got to attend an event with our friend Gab Marcotti. He was on here last Monday, and he talked about the event at the Banshee Pub here in Boston with Paolo Maldini. So I went with my wife. We got there early. I saw he had done an event in the North End. For those that don't know, that's the Italian neighborhood in Boston with De Rossi, and it was absolutely crazy there. It was a mad town. My wife was like, why aren't we going to that event? It's much closer. Why are we going to this one in Dorchester? And I told her, just wait. There'll be a lot less people in Dorchester. And that's exactly the way it was. We got there early. We were right in the front row with Maldini. Got to meet Marcotti, spent some time. It was really fantastic. You hear about how Maldini is a class act, and he is that and more. A couple of things stood out to me when he was asked about his life after retirement, if he's figured out what he wants to do when he grows up. He said, my focus is on being a good person. Talked a lot about his father's influence on him. Just came off as a total class act. At the end, the organizers asked him if he wanted to take pictures and autographs with fans, and he was more than happy to do it. Was very accommodating. A couple of other things that stood out to me about what he said is he thought the Bonucci acquisition was terrific for Milan. He called him one of the best defenders of the past 20 years. He was very surprised by the acquisition, but he said this is a great move for Milan. Interestingly, too, he talked about Juve's shift from defense to offense in the Champions League. He mentioned how teams in Spain have dominated the Champions League mainly with their offense. So it was very interesting to hear his take on that. More than anything, what really stood out to me is what a class act Maldini was, really took time with everyone, very humble, gave some very interesting answers. For those of you who haven't seen it, I posted an article. It's pinned to my Twitter page on his Q&A. A lot of interesting stuff. Well, he also mentioned that he started as a right back, then played as a right winger in Milan's Primavera before becoming a left back. So a lot of interesting tidbits there as well. So it was an excellent weekend, and I want to get to now the great Twitter questions that you guys send in. You can do that, as always, by using the CalcioLand hashtag. We have a couple more episodes this week, so please keep sending them in. So, Alex, which ones are we going to cover today?
All right. Well, let's start off with the player that really impressed us both this weekend. David, if Neymar were to join PSG, could you see Barca signing Paulo Dybala?
I saw a few Juve fans tweeting this right away. I think, you know, this is what happens when Juve has sold so many significant players in recent years. You feel like no one is safe. And look, you know, if Neymar leaves, you would almost think Dybala is the most logical replacement. Him and Messi have a great relationship. Dybala really has never hidden the fact that he'd love to play with Messi at some point at the club level as well. You know, I think there's a decent chance that Neymar goes to PSG. It will be very interesting to see what happens with Dybala. A couple of things, you know, for one, he just signed that big extension with Juve last April. There isn't an exit clause at all, certainly not one specifically for Barcelona. So just hypothetically, if Neymar goes to PSG for that huge offer, it would, as always, come down to the will of the player. It seems like Dybala, you know, realizes he needs to improve his consistency, but at the same time, you know, an opportunity to play on Barca, you never know if that train's going to come back. So an interesting situation. At this time, I still think it's much more likely that he stays at Juve regardless, but after we saw with Bonucci, you know, we've learned with the transfer market, nothing is certain.
All right. I think Barca should sign my boy Ousmane Dembele, but that's for another time.
Dave. Well, that's certainly another intriguing name for sure.
Yeah, he is special. All right, next question. It's a very interesting one. How difficult is it for a player like Karsdrop to adapt to Italy between the language and culture?
So this one, I kind of got a chuckle because this morning I saw a quote from Karsdrop where he said, you know, in the Netherlands, if your team loses, you never blame the referee or the media. And I was like, boy, is he going to have a rude awakening coming to Italy, especially playing at Roma. But that aside, which, you know, is really the Italian culture. And one of the reasons why a player like Verratti, you know, was more than happy to go play in Liga with less drama and, you know, constant paranoid theories and all. But aside from that, I think Karsdrop, you know, in Serie A, there's always, you have to adapt to the language and the culture, especially with football. You know, I mentioned it earlier, you know, all the pressure from the media, that's certainly a big part for player. Also, the language is certainly important, although, you know, nowadays there's so many foreign players on each team that, you know, English is probably spoken on training pitch almost as much as Italian. So there are some players that have really strived coming to Italy. I look at a lot of the players that went to Napoli and really embraced the culture of the city. We also saw Strootman really embrace the culture in Rome, and hopefully for Karsdrop it will be the same.
Okay, this next question, I have a lot of followers that will be interested in this answer. David, any news on Chelsea's wingback situation? Is Kondreva a realistic target, and how do you rate him?
So let's just go, because everyone keeps asking about Alexandro. There's really no updates. The last one was on, you know, Juve turning down that big bid and them also asking about Matic. To me, those deals are completely separate. I wouldn't look at Juve continuously pursuing Matic as a sign that Alexandro is leaving, although now there's more momentum for Matic going to Manchester United. So with Alexandro, there's really no development. To me, once Bonucci left, and we had already seen Dani Alves leaving, Juve losing three defensive starters in the summer was probably a lot. Of course, you know, if the player pushes to move, all bets are off. But at this time, there's no indication that Alexandro is pushing to move. I hear all these stories on him turning down an extension. As far as I know, he hasn't even been offered an extension. He has a couple more years left on his deal. As far as Kondrava, there, at my end and Di Marzio's end, there's no recent reports on him joining Chelsea, but we know that Conte has always liked him. Chelsea's been after him for quite some time. Conte at the Euro, the last Euro, used him quite a bit. There's definitely mutual respect between the two. Also, Conte and Kondrava share the same agent. Pastorello has been doing a lot of business with Chelsea, also helped out on the Bakayoko deal. But besides these tangential things, there's really no recent updates on Kondrava going to Chelsea. As far as rating him as a player, there's no doubt about it. He really struggled in the second half of last season at Inter. Any Inter fan will tell you that. I've never seen a player have so many crosses that led to nothing in a season. Overall, though, I am a fan of Kondrava. I think Inter as a whole struggled. I think on the right team, he can be a valuable player. I just don't think it makes sense for him to become the primary offensive option, which is what happened at Inter there. At this time, there's no news on it, but it wouldn't shock me if Chelsea goes back in for Kondrava before the window closes.
Okay, interesting. All right, next Twitter question is about AC Milan. Should Milan keep Niang, and wouldn't it be a better fit to keep him and Baka rather than invest in Kalinic?
So this is a good theory. I've seen a few people tweet about it. Milan fans as a whole aren't that intrigued by Kalinic. I rate him more than the average person on Twitter. But, you know, these opinions, there's no right opinion. I understand why people aren't that excited. I think Niang's a great talent. I think, you know, Milan has tried to get the most out of him. It just doesn't seem to have really worked out there. I still think he'll probably be sold before the end of the summer. As far as Baka, he's been heavily linked to Marseille. He just doesn't seem like a great fit for Montella. I think Kalinic's style much more suited for him. So I definitely get the logic in keeping Niang and Baka rather than investing a lot in Kalinic. But it seems to be Milan's going to cut the cord on Baka and then bring in another striker, and Niang could possibly be sold to a team that's desperately looking for a winger or a second striker before the end of the window.
All right. Well, the follow-up to this, David, is are there any other striker targets for Milan?
So the big names are, of course, Aubameyang and Belotti. For Belotti, it seems there's more momentum for him staying at Torino, and we've talked about this before, but I want to reiterate that the reason Torino put such a huge exit clause for 100 million was to make it hard for him to leave. So I don't want people to say, oh, you know, Torino, their valuation of Belotti is out of whack. No, they're doing this on purpose. Like, in an ideal world, they want to keep him. Belotti agreed to it in exchange for a big raise. I think he also thought, you know, it's not the end of the world if I stay here the year before the World Cup. He's only 24. As long as he keeps these performances, and there's no reason to think that he won't, his value will stay the same. So Milan, you know, I think will still keep trying to sign him and Aubameyang. I think they feel like they can sign Kalinic at any time, so it makes sense that they would look at them first. The good news for Aubameyang is the transfer window in China is closed. Doesn't seem he has many other options. It would be an enormous financial operation for Milan, but boy, would that be an impressive cherry on top of the sundae.
Amen. All right, the next question, David. We all saw Patrick Crotone's impressive performance with Milan against Bayern. Who are the brightest young Serie A stars?
So yeah, Crotone was very impressive. Richard, who we had later on the podcast, talked about, you know, how one of the advantages of Milan going through this tough stretch the past few years is they've had no choice but to focus more on their young players. It's nice to see Cutrone coming up with the other good ones that they've had. So Milan, of course, has his teammate Locatelli, very impressive player. Some of the other young stars, we've talked about them on the podcast. There's a fantastic Milinkovic-Savic on Lazio, who I think is the best young midfielder in Serie A. Interestingly, his agent, not Lazio, took him off the market for the summer. I have a feeling he will stay at Lazio at least one more season. Then, of course, there's the great midfielders on Lazio, on Napoli, I mean, Zielinski, Diarra, who was fantastic against Real Madrid. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on Raj, who a Croatian player, who I think is going to have a great season. And then on Sampdoria, there's that excellent midfielder, Torreira, who I think is doing a lot of great things, could be like a younger version of Verratti. And then there's Pellegrini on Roma, another very intriguing midfielder. So what's really interesting about Serie A is in year past, they focused on veterans way too much. Now it seems that teams are focusing more on young players. You look at Fiorentina, all the players they're sold. They are committed to making Chiesa their next big star. And I think that's great for the league. There's a lot of exciting talent. And this summer, we've seen there's more opportunities for players staying in Serie A long term, which is really great for Calcio.
All right. Here we go with a Juve question. David, do you see Bernardeschi being a Juventus player for years to come? And why do so few top teams have big-name strikers from their home country?
So, you know, I just mentioned that it's great that we're seeing young talent staying in Serie A. And I was just thinking before the podcast, in a way, you know, what is more shocking, that Juve would sell Bonucci to Milan or that Fiorentina would sell arguably their best player, Bernardeschi, to Juve? And, you know, I got to say, while it's more shocking on the surface that a player like Bonucci would go to Milan, I look at the bitter rivalry between Juve and Fiorentina. I've been wrong a lot, but I was very wrong about Bernardeschi. I really did not think he'd be at Juve. The advantage of having, you know, an Italian player at Juve is you would think there's more opportunity for them wanting to stay there long term, as opposed to, say, a Vidal or a Pogba who joins them, or even Tevez. So I definitely think Bernardeschi will be there for a while. Interestingly, as part of the deal, Juve paid $40 million plus Fiorentina getting 10% on the future resale. So that's another interesting wrinkle, but I don't think that'll happen anytime soon as far as Bernardeschi leaving. I think there's a better chance that Dybala leaves before Bernardeschi, as an example. As far as the other part of the question, you know, Juve now has Bernardeschi, one Italian forward, the rest are all foreigners. A lot of the other top teams in Europe are the same. I don't have a good answer. It just seems to me now that, you know, with EU players being able to move around, and that's been the case for a while, there's much less priority on, you know, keeping national players. I think, too, for branding for clubs, there's a lot of interest in being able to grow internationally, bringing a star from another country. So it's a fascinating question, but I wish I had a better answer than that.
All right. And the last question, which has been making its way around Twitter, is, David, what do you make of the Antonio Cassano situation?
So I've always been a big fan of Cassano, and obviously it's kind of a pathetic way to end his career. Last season he was basically frozen out at Sampdoria. Then he joined Hellas Verona. Last week he says he's retiring. Then he says it was a moment of weakness, I'm going to stay. Today, first he says, I'm leaving Verona, I want to be closer to my family. Then everyone says, oh, Cassano's retiring, and he posts something saying, oh, no, I'm not retiring, I'm just leaving Verona, and then finally he says he's retiring. So kind of, you know, I guess if you know how crazy Cassano is, it's not that surprising, but, you know, to me what's very interesting, and I was thinking of Cassano's earlier career, that if someone told me that Cassano was retiring because he wanted to be closer to his wife and kids, and that he wasn't posting these messages himself, was actually doing it through his wife's social media account, I would have never believed it. Because when Cassano was coming up, he had the reputation of being quite the ladies' man, being a party animal in that sense. And it goes to show how much his life has changed. You know, I say this as a positive. Now he's really a family man. His family still lives in Genova. He was playing at Verona. It's not that far. It's a 3-hour car ride, but it seemed like such a big distance from him, from being away from his family. So I thought of, you know, how much his life changed. So I hope in retirement he gets to enjoy his family. It's just a shame that his career is going out this way. It's kind of par for the course. We'll look back as Cassano, as someone that didn't make the most of his talent, but at least he got to do his career his way. And we got one last Twitter question that I want to answer. So someone asked me to share my thoughts on the new Manchester City signings and Pep's strategy. So, you know, they signed Danilo after Walker. They've spent an insane amount of money on defense. You know, they signed Mendy as well. And look, on the surface, you look at all these names that they've spent so much on. I mean, I don't know how much better their defense actually is. What's interesting to me is that he would go for so many of these wingback players. And, you know, I go back to the fact that he moved around Lam, moved around a lot of players. To me, Pep Guardiola really doesn't care much about roles. I think he looks at a player's attributes and then says, hey, I can use him in this spot. It's going to be interesting, you know, if this is going to start catching up to him, because I think now the pressure is on him really to deliver. Two summers in a row that City invest heavily with the types of players that he wants. So I think now it's time for him to prove that he can get the most out of the talent that he's been allowed to spend so much on. So thank you all for the Twitter questions. Thank you all for subscribing, sharing what we do. We rely on you to market the podcast. So now I want to introduce our next great guest. We'll be joined by Richard Hall, who's an Italian football writer that contributes to BT Sport, ESPN FC, Guardian Sport, Football Italia, BN Sport. He's a guest on SiriusXM as well. But he's also the founder of one of the best websites on Italian football, Gentleman Ultra. So we're going to get into, during the interview, about his site, but also what he thinks of Italian football, with the hot topics going on with calcio now. Okay, so all you guys know that by far my favorite part of the podcast is the interview, and today I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Richard Hall. The reason I wanted him on the podcast is A, he is a Serie A expert, and we're going to jump into the recent hot topics in Serie A, but also he has one of my favorite sites on Italian football. I try, you know, on the podcast, we try not to talk too much about the glory days. We're trying to help Serie A kind of move along and get back to those days, but his site really grabs the essence of why Italian football is so special. So we'll get into that. So Richard, thanks so much for joining us on Calcioland today.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for the kind words on the site. It's great to be here and great to be on a pod with you again, David.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about an article you wrote last week that I found very interesting. It was on Inter acquiring Borja Valero. And, you know, this summer, especially with the way Milan is going, it's been a little bit disappointing for Inter fans. But to me, the acquisition of Borja Valero is really underrated. He's a very good player. He's been one of the best midfielders in Serie A for quite some time. So for those that didn't read the article, Richard, what would you say Inter fans should expect from him this season?
I think with Valero, I think one of the first, when you mentioned the fact that it was almost underwhelming with Inter's transfer policy this summer, it kind of fitted into that in some respects because, you know, especially what's going across the city, there's been some big signings. And Valero sort of almost went under the radar. But for me, the biggest thing he offers, not only his technical ability of what he can actually do and his experience that he's actually cultivated whilst playing abroad. So he's almost at his age at 32. For me, quite a complete player, quite a complete midfielder. And, you know, Inter have had their spending over the last couple of summers and it's just not worked in the midfield area. Probably the best they've had, in my opinion, was a kind of strange mix of Kondogbia, Medel and Brozovic, which worked for a very fleeting amount of time. And this is under different types of coaches. And you look at the whole Inter team, the amount of players that have been used, all of it with the key of trying to unlock Icardi, and it's not kind of happened. For me, what Valero can give Inter is a bit of calmness and a bit of an ability to spot a pass. You know, coming through the Real Madrid, the schooling of that, he's not just a player who's going to play passing to passing stake. You know, he's played in the Premier League, he's played in Serie A now, very successfully at Fiorentina. And for me, what I'm hoping from him, even at his age, is that he can sort of transition his role a little, to play a little deeper and try and unlock the wide men and also the rest of the midfield, because Inter have been very static and very turgid at times over the last couple of seasons. And for me, this is a player who could really potentially unlock the flow. And ultimately, and what obviously is the end game for them, is to someone unlock Icardi.
Great points. To me, he's going to bring everything that Inter expected from Banega, that, you know, he showed some flashes of it, wasn't consistent. And I think the fact that Borja Valero has been getting it done in Serie A, he'll bring what Inter was hoping from Banega. So excellent assessment. For those of you that didn't read the article, I really recommend it because there's a lot of great details there. So we mentioned, you know, obviously the disappointment for Inter fans, especially compared to Milan. So far, other than Borja Valero, we've seen Skriniar, who's a very good prospect at center back, but not a huge, sexy name coming to Inter. What other positions do you think Inter needs to reinforce this summer, and are you optimistic they'll be able to do it?
Yeah, I am optimistic with Inter so far. I mean, one of the main reasons is because when Spalletti has come into this squad, it is a talented squad. I don't think there's any doubt of that. You know, there's many, many players in that team that haven't unlocked or fulfilled any of the potential. And to get them playing as a cohesive unit, you know, I'm hoping Spalletti can do that. That doesn't mean the team, you know, still doesn't need improving. The fullbacks, to me, drastically need improving. I was really impressed with Danilo D'Ambrosio last season. I thought he was excellent, you know, but again, is that enough? No, probably not. So the fullback positions are really key. And also, you know, you still have that situation where touch wood for my sake, that Mauro Icardi doesn't go out injured for a long period of time. You know, if Mauro Icardi is out, who's filling that void? You know, do they need some strengthening in that situation as well? Obviously, the wide men with Kondreva and Perisic, you know, more than me, you know, there's been so much conjecture over their futures this season, then, you know, there maybe has to be a plan B in place there. But realistically, overall with Inter, I'm quite happy with the balance of the squad. I think it needs to add a little more depth. I think this Spalletti was talking about playing with 18 to 20 players who could ultimately interchange or any of them be in the first team. So there's quite a few players in that squad that have probably had more than one chance. There's a couple of seasons where maybe it's time for them to move on now. So, yeah, I don't think there needs to be any major overhaul. I just think they need to get the balance right.
Excellent. I agree with you. To me, with Inter, there's been so many years of squandered talent. And that, to me, you know, Inter fans can at least hang their hats on the fact that they have Spalletti, who has a great track record, at least in Serie A with Roma, and Sabatini, who's shown the ability to bring in some talents. And I agree with you as far as the areas they need to improve on. So let's move to Inter's crosstown rivals, Milan, who have been dominating the summer window. You mentioned Inter needing fullbacks. They landed two really good ones in Conte and Ricardo Rodriguez. But probably the most shocking signing was Leonardo Bonucci joining them. So, Richard, what was your take on that transfer?
I'm shocked, like everyone else is. I think there's very few who, I mean, maybe some people like yourself, David, may have a bit more insight to it than we did early doors. But that was, you know, no one expected that. Look, I mean, if you go through, put it this way, if anyone had asked me, right in the top 10 players of the Serie A that you will not expect to move this summer, Bonucci would have been in there, along with the likes of Buffon. You know, they would be. That's how you expect them to be there. They've been such part of Juventus for so long. But, you know, I mean, it's one of those that when you actually sit back in the cold light of day and reflect on the transfer, it starts to come to light of why it happened, obviously. So, you know, there had been issues, you know, with the conflict with Allegri. We'd seen that. I think it was against Pescara earlier in the season when he was left out. There's the obviously situations with the Champions League final, but realistically, I think at the end of it, you know, the deal kind of makes sense to me more now, in the sense of it didn't seem like Bonucci wanted to leave Italy. Who else was going to really take him at that time for that money that quickly? So, yeah, it's starting to sort of resonate into a fantastic move for Milan, really, more than anything. I mean, yeah, sure, if Allegri, if it's the truth comes out that he doesn't want what he would call players who are a problem at that time, but it's Dani Alves and Bonucci in the squad, then fine. So he gets his way in that sense. The money was, well, it's not, you'd think that people would pay more for that. But when you look at Milan and what they've got out of that, you know, just the character of the guy, the leadership he could have, and it's what Milan have been needing so, so badly and not had for so, so long. So it does look like it's gone more, in my opinion, to the favour of Milan. But at the end of the day, one thing I would say, and it's a positive for Juventus, is that as wonderful and fantastic as the back three and the goalkeeper have been for so, so long, it's never going to stay around forever. And maybe this is now the start of the evolution of Juventus. And rather than it all happening at once in two or three seasons, it can gradually do it now. So there's a bonus for them too.
I really agree with that take. From my perspective, Juve is kind of shifting their focus from having the best defense to really try and improve the front lines. And it seems a lot of the teams that have won the Champions League have taken that approach. So one last question on Milan. So they brought in essentially a new team. We'll see Donnarumma, Romagnoli, and likely Bonaventura starting, probably Suso as well. But the rest will be a brand new team. Where do you expect them to be in the standings at the end of the season?
That's a difficult question, David, isn't it? The reason it's so difficult to answer that is because last season, obviously, with Inter, when you saw the arrivals, Benega, we mentioned, already gone. Giamario, we've seen there. These examples, not just here, but if you look at, say, when Gareth Bale left Tottenham, for instance, and you saw the amount of players that were brought in then, that team looked fantastic with Lamella, et cetera, et cetera. There are examples of this happening before, and it doesn't end up amounting to much. Now, I rate Montella, I think he's exceptional. I think he's will be able to work with this. But I mean, I'm really torn as to where they're going to finish for two reasons. One, they have got so much talent, and I think it looks like it's going to be a brilliant squad of players. Probably still needs a little more depth, ironically, but in that, I still think they can finish high. But one thing I really liked about Milan was that almost accidentally, through the endless sale that never was, they accidentally had to look on the youth policy, and they sort of fell accidentally on this brilliant crop of players. And I don't want them to lose that either. So I'm hoping the mix for them will work, but I'm really unsure because, I think, of course, Europe, but whether it's, and possibly Champions League, but I don't think they'll win the Scudetto. I still think Juventus is far too strong, and Napoli, I'm so impressed with still. So, yeah, third or fourth.
Yeah, I'm with you on Napoli. I keep saying that the fact that they haven't made any moves but kept their best players is really the best thing they could have done based on the talent on the squad. So you mentioned Juventus, and I agree with you. They have to be the favorites for the Scudetto going in to next season. But they've won six of these now. They've lost they've lost two out of the last three Champions League finals. Do you think their best chance to win a cup with Buffon came and went with that match in Cardiff, or do you think they still have a chance to win it with Buffon lifting the cup, hopefully, for them?
I'm a strong believer that they can still lift it with Buffon, and even if not, it'll be soon afterwards. When you looked at when Juventus bought Dani Alves, they needed champions, they needed winners in there to get there again. These players, like you said, it's been two Champions League finals. They're gaining experience. Juventus have, in those times, have turned over a lot of players as well. But I think that now, the squad that they're getting used to playing in finals. And that makes a difference. The squad's mentality, the way the club were last time, even down to social media, the whole club is on a mission to win that tournament. And, I don't personally think they're going to stop until they've done it. I think they've got characters, more experience in the competition. They pretty much can, I think, will win the Scudetto again. Not maybe a canter, but, they'll still win it. And I think the argument, in some respects, it might actually help them if it's closer this year. Because for me, and it's only my opinion, I thought Juventus won that Scudetto in second gear last year. There's so many games I watched where I thought that, they just breeze through and not really been pushed. And I think that possibly, this season, if they are pushed, they'll have to use a lot more of the squad as well. I certainly think they can win it with Buffon, and I'd expect them to be at least semi-finalists at least next year.
Very interesting topic. So thank you for all your insight on what's going on the pitch. And now I really wanted to get into what you do with your site. Like I mentioned at the beginning, one of my favorites, a lot of the internet, because to me, it really shows the essence of Italian football. To me, the good and bad that comes with it. So you founded the site back in 2011. What made you decide to start it? And tell us a little bit about the impressive growth of the site over the years, because now you're part of the Guardian Sport Network, which is obviously very prestigious and very impressive.
No, thank you. It's strange, the evolution of the site, and it still surprises me now. I mean, realistically, this started, it was me almost like blogging, I suppose, going back in a long time ago. I've been going out to Italy to watch football for over 10 years now. And that, when I first started loving Italian football, was back in Italia 90. It's my first World Cup that I really remember in detail. And after that, as many people know, Channel 4 in the UK started up with James Richardson doing Gazzetta Football Italia. And, you know, at the time, the vision of San Siro, the Dele Alpi at the time, there's so many amazing stadiums, amazing teams. See, I was the best league in the world, and it was it captivated everyone in the UK. Premier League came along, and everyone obviously moved on to that. But I kind of stayed with Serie A, and so it grew from that. And going out there and watching the games and trying to just write about it, because when you go to Italy, as you well know, it's not. I suppose it's the best way to describe it. It's looking at Italian football. Yes, it's through rose-tinted glasses. And that's when you look back nostalgically over all the players and the things that made you love the game. But when you go out there, it's not always everything it's made out to be, as it isn't as a country in some respects. And so we also try to start exploring the dark underbelly of that, including the ultras, and there's good and bad within that. And I was blogging a lot about, writing different pieces on there. And Luca Hodges-Ramon came along, who's absolutely fantastic, so talented as a writer and editor as well, and we started working on the site, and then we started exploring a lot more about the ultras, and Luca's insight to that was fantastic, and the research he does is incredible, and that's what got us onto the Guardian Sports Network many, many moons ago. So it's developed from there, and now it's just got bigger and bigger. We've also got Blair Newman on as fantastic editor as well. Luca's editing now, and between the three of us, we're trying to just move that on. But it just seems the stories that keep happening from experiences have taken it on. And one of the biggest things is that we don't, on the site, is that we've got so many fantastic writers on there who I believe, the best way to look at it is that we don't hold heavy deadlines. We want people to write about what they're passionate in. We want people to take as much time as they want to write. And hopefully that comes out in the writing, that this is people writing about their passion, something that means the most to them. And if they can do that, then it comes out. Whether that's stories of whether they've been players, they, still remember the fantastic, stories from way back when. Stories, the stories coming on there now, I haven't even heard of. And it surprises me. And the amount of people we have now and the level of writing seems to just increase. There's still a lot more to come, but... Luca talking to me today, and he just says it's a joy for him to edit the site because of the stories he has to and the writers he has to work with. So it has evolved a lot, but the essence of it really is to combine that, as I said before, that beautiful image that we all have of Italian football, but try and also explore some of those inner truths as well.
Fantastic description. And I remember, a few years ago, I wrote an article for your site because, I travel to Italy often. All my best friends are huge Milan fans where I grew up. And I've been going to Milan clubs for years around Italy. And I really wanted an outlet to be able to write about that because everyone, knows about the games at San Siro, Juventus Stadium, the Olimpico. But to me, the culture of Italian football is really what you see in the clubs and in the small fields, the amateur fields, and that really to me is what makes Italian football special. And there's really no other place that you can write about that sort of stuff than your site, Gentleman Ultra. So to me, the name of the site is perfect because you get into what the ultra culture is like. And I have quite a few friends that are ultras in Italy, and the wide range of types of people that they are is really remarkable. We had on last week on our show Maurizio, who runs a Juve club in Turin. They do great thing with international fans, and he's a serious professional who has a great career. He's also someone that goes to the curva all the time. From the outside, you describe him as an ultra. I also have friends, that I would say maybe aren't so accomplished on the professional field and enjoy maybe more of the mischief angle that comes with the ultra culture, which is something, that started in Italy and then expanded to other parts of the world. So in your site, you describe this culture so well, and I think in such a fair way, the good and the bad that comes with it. So if you had to describe the ultra culture to someone that just isn't familiar with it, how would you go about it?
Well, it's very much, I mean, I think society itself is, when we look at the ultra culture, it's not the average Italian perception of it, because obviously there's been so many problems over there and over time that it becomes anything that's a hot topic in any country nonstop, you know, often gets bogged down. The only reason we started doing it is very much through British or English eyes, if you would. And because, look, I'm as far away from an ultra as you could possibly ever get. You know, if I take the rip out myself, I mean, I'm, you know, private school boy from England, little village in England, and to go out to Italy and to see this thing of, you know, the Curva Nord, and to be accepted into that and to see it was breathtaking. You know, it's absolutely incredible of how different it is, the fan culture, what it means. Obviously, you start realizing that the locality of, obviously, the provinciality, should I say, Italy, how that these local regions still, it resonates within them, and it's fantastic. You know, going there and seeing this sort of fan culture, you're not, because I'm not Italian, you take a step back from it and you can hopefully assess it in a different way. And I think that's just been maybe a little bit refreshing on the way that a couple of us have looked at that. You know, I mean, there's just some incredible stories from when we've been out there. I mean, if you take, for example, if you went down to the Emirates in the UK, in London, you know, you're not getting anywhere near any of the players. I remember people being told to sit down, you know, for shouting too loudly. It's incredible. But in Italy, you know, I've had an experience where I've been taken down by one of a friend of mine now in the Curva Nord, down under the car park, met Javier Zanetti. And those things don't happen. You know, it's incredible how it resonates and what the feeling of the clubs resonate. It's not always great. It's not. There's obviously elements to it. You know, especially, for my opinion, moments for the younger generation. You know, there's always going to have that. I mean, one of the best ways to describe that was one of the main ultras on the Curva Nord for Inter said to me, when I asked him about, because some of the younger ones can be a little over the top, and obviously there's a bit of a drug culture at certain grounds as well. And I asked him about, you know, you get a couple of these guys here, and he said, listen, if you gather 8,000, 9,000 people in one area at one time, anywhere in the world, no matter who they are, you're going to get idiots. We can't control all of it. But the fact that when you look at it on a bigger scale and how they operate, what they bring to the game, it is generally, overall, incredible. However, obviously, as you know, there are lots of incidents where, you know, I mean, you remember the one in Genoa, not so long, well, yeah. It must be 2012, was it, where they made them give them the shirts back, where for not,
yeah.
It was Marco Rossi at the time, you know, in tears. There's many, many bad incidents as well, and where it goes too far. We've seen one the other day with Brescia and Calgary in the pre-season. You know, the scenes there are awful. It's not always conducive, and it does spill over. But I think the thought process of that and the way that people look at it from an outside perspective is ultra, it's bad, it's hooligan, and it's not. It's a way to support the club. It is actually part of the culture out there. And you can see some really, really good things in that as well.
It's such a fascinating topic that during the season, I'd love you to to come back on and we just delve into it, because there's so many other things about it that I'd like to mention as well. But let's talk about a book that your site is promoting. It's on Herbert Kilpin, who many know as the founder of AC Milan. And, you know, Milan started with roots in England in the sense of their founder, and it was known as a cricket club at first, not just football. So tell us a little bit about his role in creating what is one of the biggest brands, not only in Italian football, but world football, and about the book as well.
Yeah, the reason we're promoting this is a strange reason. Obviously, as you're saying, the book is called Lord of Milan, The Story of Herbert Kilpin. We were contacted. We'd already done a bit on this guy, on Herbert Kilpin. We'd done an article already. And anyway, there was, when was it now? I'm trying to think back. There was a book came out, and we were contacted by the author, Mr. Del Neri, about this, if he could actually publish on the site, and it would go on The Guardian. And that, before he did that, then it ended up going out and being published, and so far been quite a success. And we actually did Luca and myself. There's a pub in Nottingham called the Kilpin Pub that's been named after him now. And they launched the book there, and we did a talk on this as well. And this is a son. This is a story of a guy who, as many people in England at that time, was working. You know, these people worked on the railways, they worked in banking, all different, you know, shit and everything. And they all ended up all around the world, whether that was on the River Plate, on the banks of Africa, wherever it was. And this textile worker ended up in Milan. And he wanted to play football. It's as simple as that. And he started getting a team together. Of course, it's cricket as well. And he developed from there. And it's quite an odd story because now this guy, he's not as you would imagine now. This guy was known to smoke during the game. He'd drank heavily as well. You know, it's football in a very, very rustic state from way back when. And but this guy from Nottingham, you know, had been out there. And no matter, you know, obviously, by the time he died, which was in obscurity in 1916, I don't think, obviously, he had, from those humble roots in Nottingham, he had no idea that, obviously, he'd created already then one of the biggest and most successful football teams, probably in world football, definitely European. And the book, without giving too much away, is just fantastic because it's written, there's not a great deal of information left about this guy. So the author's brilliant into sort of ad-libbing a little bit of what's happened. But the story itself is fantastic because how this guy has gone out and what he's created is just symbolic of how football develops and just what message it had, because this is somebody who's gone out to Milan and done this, where it was happening all over the world at the same time. And so it's a good read for any football fan, because not only do, especially Italian football fans and Milan fans, but not only does it represent the birth of that club, but it also represents, probably in my eyes, the birth of most football clubs, so everyone can kind of relate to it.
Very, very interesting. So let's close on this. You have a lot of amazing writers on your site. I know a lot of them, quite a few are probably listening to us now. So tell us, you know, there's also a lot of aspiring writers that are looking to get to the level of being as good as being able to contribute on your site. So tell us what qualities your best writers share. What attributes do you think they have that maybe listeners aren't aware of?
Yeah, the biggest thing about the site for me is that, listen, you know, I'm not the best writer in the world by a long shot. And the thing is, for me, this was just writing out of passion. And this writing out of passion for me has personally led to various different things, which is fantastic. But also, for us, the fact that we can get people onto the Guardian Sport Network is really important. And we don't really look for, you don't have to be the best writer in the world. You don't have to be doing it as a profession. You don't have to be, you know, even. We actually have a segment called Tales to the Peninsula, where anyone can actually just write in about an experience. Luca and Blair, fantastic editors, and if it was someone brand new and wanting to learn, they give some amazing feedback. I mean, they could probably give me more feedback. I could do with improving, but yeah, they are fantastic. And one, we've produced some, there's been some great writers, you know, who've come through. At the moment, we've got Matt Fede, there's so many, Kevin, Mark, Gio, Chloe as well, Chloe Burris. There's so many different people who've come through and gone on to do even better things and write for us. And that's really nice, because basically all we want is someone who's really has something to write about, has a story, maybe something we've never heard about. Just somewhere where they want to, you know, hopefully with the right outlet, something about Italian football, and they can have enough time to write about it. There's no, take as long as you want, there's no deadline. And then let us have it. And if it needs editing, we'll sort it out and we can give feedback. If we're not, we don't need to. And that's it, because then hopefully we pitch about five or six of these to the Guardian. We don't choose which ones go on. We let the Guardian choose. So it's really a fair process. And if they like it, they'll publish it. And, you know, hopefully then, if those people are aspiring writers, then they can take that as a platform to step up and move on to something much bigger and better than us. So that's it, really. You know, it's just something, it's done out of passion by all of us. There's some great people on there. And, you know, hopefully more people keep coming, really.
I think the advice you shared, you know, about write about what you know, write about what you're passionate about when you're getting started, is so invaluable. That's how me, many other, many much more accomplished people than I have done. And I think the other thing that's really important is take feedback. You mentioned you have great editors, but and they give you great feedback, and it's really important to be able to take that feedback and improve. Are there any other tips that you would give to up-and-coming writers that are listening to us right now?
It's really strange. I feel wrong doing that because there's so many out there already that are better than what I'm doing. But the point being, I'd say for me is, I've written to various different platforms, and the one thing it goes back to, it's okay. Don't get me wrong. We can write about Italian football because you everyone gets to a level where you're capable of doing it. But going back to that thing we passed about, I spend a lot of time in Milan, and I know Milan inside out. I find it so easy to write about places I've been to, whether it's the grounds I've been to, whether it's I've been all over the place in Italy, but because you can remember the smells, the sights, the sounds, what it meant, the feeling, the fans, everything. And that's the easiest thing to do, because then if you got that experience, or if you're writing about, it doesn't even matter if you've been, it's about the games you remember, the teams you know, those emotions. And if you can try and reconnect with any of those emotions, even if it's, if you've stayed up till ridiculous o'clock in the morning to watch your team, lose 3-0, and you remember how it feels, that's important. So just as long as you're passionate about it. Well, listen, it doesn't always have to come down to talent, because I'm probably proof of that. So it's passion can outweigh it sometimes.
So, Richard, it was a real pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for joining us. Everyone check out the amazing Gentleman Ultra site, and we look forward to having you back on during the season to talk more about ultra culture and everything going on in Italy. So thank you so much for joining us, Richard.
Thanks, guys. Really, really appreciate it.